Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Tuesday, June 23rd. And quick question before I start. How many words per minute can you type on a keyboard? I just did the test for this episode, and my number was 70 words per minute. The reason I did it is because on this day in 1868, Christopher Latham Sholes and his colleagues were granted a patent for the first practical typewriter. You've probably never heard of him, but you do use his most lasting invention every single day. Look at your keyboard right now, on your laptop, on your phone, whatever. The top rows of the letters read Q-W-E-R-T-Y, QWERTY. Have you ever wondered why? The letters are not alphabetical. They're not arranged by frequency, and they don't follow any pattern that makes obvious sense. I've been typing on this layout my entire life, and I never once questioned it until I started looking into it for today's episode. The reason that the letters are where they are has nothing to do with helping you type faster. It actually might be doing the opposite. And the reason that we're all still using it 158 years later, even though the original problem it solved hasn't existed since the 1980s, might be one of the most important concepts in economics that nobody ever teaches you. Sholes was a newspaper editor from Wisconsin who spent the late 1860s developing a writing machine with his associates Carlos Glidden and Samuel Soule. Their first prototype had several keys arranged alphabetically, which seems like the logical choice, but it wasn't. The mechanical typewriter worked by swinging little metal arms called type bars upward to strike an inked ribbon against paper. When you hit a key, its type bar would swing up, print a letter, and then fall back. I personally loved the typewriter. My uncle in India gave me one years ago, and I still have it somewhere in my parents' house. But the problem with the typewriter was that if you hit two adjacent keys in rapid succession, the type bars would collide on their way up and jam together. You'd have to stop, manually unstick the bars, and then start again. On an alphabetical keyboard, commonly paired letters like S, T, or D, and E sat right next to each other, which meant jams were constant. Sholes spent 5 years rearranging the keys through trial and error, sometimes working with a mathematician named James Densmore, who studied which letter pairs appeared most frequently in English. The goal was to separate commonly paired letters so that their type bars wouldn't collide. By 1873, he had settled on something close to the QWERTY layout that we use today. And he sold the design to the Remington Arms Company, which was branching into manufacturing after the Civil War. Now, the popular story says that QWERTY was specifically designed to slow typists down. That's an oversimplification, and I want to be honest about it. The layout wasn't meant to make you slower. It was meant to prevent jams by distributing common letter pairs across different areas of the keyboard. The net effect was that typists couldn't hammer out certain combinations as rapidly. But the intent was mechanical reliability, not speed reduction. Some researchers have also suggested that telegraph operators, who were among the first heavy typewriter users, influenced the layout because they found alphabetical arrangements confusing for transcribing Morse code. What's undeniable is that the layout was designed around the physical limitations of 1870s machinery. Those limitations disappeared years ago. There are no type bars on your laptop. There are no type bars in your phone, and the mechanical problem that QWERTY was built to solve has been gone for 40 years now, and every person reading this is still using the same solution. There was someone trying to change this, though. In the 1930s, an educational psychologist named August Dvorak at the University of Washington looked at the QWERTY layout and thought it was insane. He studied the most common letters and letter combinations in English and designed a layout that placed them on the home row, the middle row where your fingers naturally rest. On a Dvorak keyboard, A, O, E, U, I, D, H, T, N, and S are all on the home row, which is the middle row. Fun fact, about 70% of English typing happens on the home row of a Dvorak keyboard, compared to roughly 31% on QWERTY. Your fingers travel less distance. The most used keys are in the most accessible positions, so by every logical measure, it should be better. But the evidence for that is mixed. Dvorak himself ran a study for the US Navy during World War II that showed Dvorak-trained typists were significantly faster. But the study was designed and overseen by Dvorak, which is a conflict of interest that later researchers flagged. A 1956 General Services Administration study found no significant advantage. More recent analyses suggest that the Dvorak keyboard is probably 5 to 10% faster once you're fully retrained, which is meaningful, but it's not revolutionary. So the logical question, why didn't it replace the QWERTY keyboard? Well, it's because by the 1930s, millions of people had already learned to type on QWERTY keyboards. Every typing class, every secretary school, every office in America had trained its workforce on one layout. Switching would have required retraining every typist in the country, replacing every typewriter, and accepting a 12-month-long productivity drop while everyone relearned. The cost of switching was enormous, and the benefits, maybe 5 to 10% faster typing, just wasn't large enough to justify. So to be clear, QWERTY was not the best layout, but it was the first layout that got widely adopted, and that was enough to make it permanent. If you ever hear people talk about the first mover's advantage, this is a beautiful example of that. And quick little tip for you, I personally wouldn't do it, but you can actually switch to Dvorak right now for free. Every major operating system, Windows, Mac, iPhone, and Android, lets you change your keyboard layout to Dvorak in the settings. It doesn't take very long, but the issue is that if you use your normal QWERTY keyboard, it'll still say QWERTY on the keyboard, even though what you'll type will be in the Dvorak format. That's just way too confusing for me. And I think you can find a Dvorak keyboard somewhere on the internet, but it's not the easiest to find. And after I said that, if you still had no intention of switching, I think that's kind of the point of this episode. Nobody really wants to. I mean, the real barrier at this point is not money or technology. It's the fact that you have to relearn how to type. And that relearning period, a few weeks of feeling slow and frustrated, is uncomfortable enough that billions of people will choose to stay on a suboptimal layout forever, rather than push through it. The cost is entirely psychological, and it's still too high. If that sounds familiar from the skills episode that we did last week, it should, because it's the same mechanism. Your brain avoids the discomfort of early failure even when the long-term payoff is better. In this case, 5 to 10% better, so nothing too crazy. By the way, economists have a name for what happened to the keyboard. It's called path dependency, and it means that decisions made early in the system's history constrain all future decisions, even when the original reasons for those decisions no longer apply. The system gets locked in, not because the current arrangement is optimal, but because the cost of changing it is higher than the cost of living with something suboptimal. You're not using QWERTY because it's the best way to type. You're using it because Remington sold a lot of typewriters in the 1880s, and everyone learned the layout and nobody could coordinate a switch. The most absurd proof of this is in your pocket. QWERTY on a smartphone makes even less sense than on a laptop. You're thumb typing on a flat piece of glass. There are no type bars. There is no home row. There's no mechanical anything, right? The entire ergonomic logic that justified QWERTY doesn't apply to a touchscreen, and yet every smartphone on Earth uses the same 1870s layout because when Apple launched the iPhone in 2007, they could have really used any arrangement that they wanted, but they chose QWERTY because that's what people had already known. Path dependency followed us from typewriters to desktops to laptops, now to the phone. And at no point along that chain did anyone stop and ask whether the layout still made sense for the new device. Once you see path dependency, you start noticing it everywhere. The United States uses Fahrenheit for temperature, and every other country on Earth, except Liberia and Myanmar, uses Celsius. Fahrenheit isn't more intuitive, it's not more scientific, and it makes international communication harder. But switching would require changing every thermostat, every weather report, every recipe, every medical device, and retraining 300 million people's intuitive sense of what 72 degrees feels like. So we don't switch. By the way, quick little trick. If you want to convert Fahrenheit to Celsius quickly, just subtract 30 and then divide by 2. So for example, 80 degrees Fahrenheit is 80 minus 30, which is 50, and then divided by 2. So around 25. It's not perfect, but it'll get you close. Another thing that we continue using are imperial measurements. The U.S. is one of three countries that doesn't use the metric system. NASA lost a $125 million Mars orbiter in 1999 because one engineering team used metric units and another used imperial, and nobody caught the mismatch. The spacecraft entered the atmosphere at the wrong angle and disintegrated. $125 million and years of work destroyed because America uses a measurement system that was old-fashioned in 1799. But switching would require changing every road sign, every speedometer, every building code, and every American's sense of how far a mile is. Path dependency wins again. The thing that sits with me ever since I started researching this episode is that the keyboard has survived for 158 years because nobody could agree on a better layout. Every alternative required retraining millions of people, and the improvement was never large enough to justify the pain. QWERTY beat Dvorak, it also beat Colmac, and it beat pretty much every other challenger, not because it was better, but because it was already there. The thing that might actually kill it isn't an arrangement of keys. It's actually not typing at all. It's voice to text, which has gotten good enough in the last few years that a growing number of people, including myself, are starting to dictate instead of type. The accuracy has improved dramatically. The speed is faster than most people can type, and it doesn't require you to learn any new layout at all. The keyboard that survived 158 years because no alternative could overcome the switching cost might just get replaced by the thing that skips the keyboard entirely, our voice. Scholes, for what it's worth, never stopped trying to improve his own design. He filed a patent for a completely different layout called XPMCH in 1889, a year before he died. He knew that QWERTY wasn't his best arrangement. He just couldn't convince anyone to switch because by then, his first version had already won. The inventor couldn't even escape his own path dependency. And 158 years later, neither can we. So if you're going to go type an email today and you fat finger something, I want you to think of this. The QWERTY keyboard was designed in the 1870s to prevent mechanical typewriter keys from jamming by separating commonly paired letters. The mechanical typewriter hasn't existed in decades, but the layout persists because millions of people learned it and the cost of switching to something better has never been worth the disruption. The Dvorak layout, designed in the 1930s, is probably 5 to 10% faster, but it never gained traction because QWERTY was already everywhere. Economists call this path dependency. Early decisions lock in systems that persist long after the original reasons disappear. The same pattern explains why America uses Fahrenheit and why we measure in miles. The inventor of QWERTY himself tried to replace it with a better layout a year before he died, but he just couldn't. 158 years later, you're still using his first draft. The thing that might finally kill it isn't a better keyboard. It's skipping the keyboard entirely. This is not an ad, but if you want to check one good service out, there's one called WhisperFlow, W-I-S-P-R, and then flow, just the way you spell it. It's pretty cool. You just download it on your laptop and you can essentially dictate everything that you want to type. I think I type at like 140 or 150 words per minute using my voice. But if you like to be old school and keep things the way they are, just go type something on your QWERTY keyboard right now. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.